All right, what is up, everybody? Welcome back to the No Nation Wrestling YouTube channel, or if you're listening on Spotify, Apple, Google, whatever podcast platform, thank you guys very much, and welcome back to the Ruthless Discussions podcast. For the first time in well over a year, we are going to be doing the Ruthless Discussions podcast, and it is going to be coming to you every single Thursday morning, again, on whichever platform you choose to watch and listen. But very excited to bring this podcast back. If you don't know, it is a podcast strictly about the Ruthless Aggression era in the WWE. There's a lot of wrestling podcasts out there, but back when I started this, I wanted to do something a little bit different and a little bit something that, hits more close home to me. You know, if there's anything that I go back and rewatch the most, it is Ruthless Aggression era stuff. You know, I like dipping into some real old WCW here and there, watching some old WCW cruiserweights. I like watching a lot of ECW stuff, but more often than not, if I'm going on Peacock or if I'm popping in a DVD and I'm watching something back, it's Ruthless Aggression era base. It's just the era I grew up on, and just the era I love so much. The first episode of this podcast back in 2022, I really talked about that and why I started and what the RA era means to me. So you guys can go check that out. And when we started this last year, we did up to 5 episodes, and then I just kind of fell out of it, man. Over the last year and change, I've completely reworked very hard on all 3 of my YouTube channels. What this current wrestling channel is now is not what it was, a year and change ago when I started the RA podcast. So I'm very happy where we are at just overall on YouTube. We have the wrestling channel, the gaming channel, the Star Wars channel, a couple of my loves. It's only right that if we are having this wrestling channel and I'm, continuing to take the next step to grow, that we bring back something that I was very excited about when I was doing it, and I am very excited to really move forward with and bring to you guys again every single Thursday, and that is the Ruthless Discussions podcast. And of course, this is a podcast, so won't be too many edits, so keep up with me when there's a pause here and there. But today, we are going to be talking about Survivor Series 2002, taking place Sunday night, November the 17th, 2002, from Madison Square Garden, the world's most famous arena in New York City. And might I say, I miss when Madison Square Garden was like always on the WWE calendar every year. We had pay-per-views there, and it felt like the world's most famous arena. I know they've been going there like ever since they, I guess they were going there beforehand too, but they'll do a Raw or a SmackDown there like once a year. But for one, ever since they renovated MSG and got rid of the small entrance, hasn't really felt the same. It still does look a little different. Like if you really pay attention, you can tell it's a different setup in the arena than others. And of course, when you get the roof shots, the roof of MSG is very unique. That is actually like one of the backgrounds that I've been using on a lot of the graphics for the wrestling channel and the podcast is a wide shot from WrestleMania 20, and you can see like the roof. It's just one of the things that makes it super unique. I love MSG, and coincidentally enough, it might not even be a full 2 hours from MSG. Let's look it up right now. We are on the podcast. Let's see. I don't think it's a full 2 hours from where I am in New Jersey to Madison Square Garden, but let's look it up. But the reason I say this is because even though I live fairly close, I have never been to Madison Square Garden. I don't know why. Hour and 43 minutes currently. Biting some traffic. But yeah, I've never been to Madison Square Garden. I just, I don't know why, I guess. I mean, I do know why. For years, I was just, young, and my parents weren't bringing me all up there. Philadelphia is more my backyard for wrestling shows. And then in recent years, it's just like Raws or SmackDowns. It's like, am I really missing out? Do I really want to go all the way up there just for a Raw or SmackDown? Like, I would love if they brought a pay-per-view to MSG again, man. I don't think we've had a pay-per-view there since Survivor Series 2011, I believe is the last one. And then outside of a Raw and SmackDown, like, they do the live events there, I believe the day after Christmas every year. But same thing, like, I'm not going all the way up there, especially during the week of Christmas and New Year's, where it's just busy as hell, especially in New York City, just for a live event. So I would love if WWE started really treating MSG again, like, yo, this is the world's most famous arena, big pay-per-view, fill in the blank. I know a lot of pay-per-views are hitting stadiums and going international. It's not the same as it once was. And I am a fan of that because, spreading out the WWE, going to different areas has been something very cool in recent years. And it's given us some awesome moments, some awesome crowds. Some of the international crowds way better than some of the United States crowds. But I would love, 2024 or just whenever for WWE to go back and do a pay-per-view at MSG. I think it would be very cool. But Survivor Series 2002, man, this show, I don't want to say universally known as the greatest Survivor Series of all time, because everybody's got their own opinions, but I think more often than not, I see the Survivor Series raved as the GOAT of Survivor Series pay-per-views. And it definitely is for me, man. You know, someone who started watching full-time WWE in 2005, and wrestling was in my house years prior to that, so I would, you know, watch here and there, but full-time 2005, that's another thing I talked about on the first episode of this podcast last year, is, you know, some of those specifics. But and you know, have literally seen every single Survivor Series multiple times over. I'm not kidding when I say that. Literally last year, I don't know why, but instead of doing my normal, like, oh, let me watch the Ruthless Aggression Survivor Series and maybe some Attitude Era ones, last year specifically, and it wasn't the first time leading up to Survivor Series, because I always like to watch, you know, stuff that's leading up, like, oh, freaking, whatever the October pay-per-view is coming up, let me go back and watch some No Mercies, like, you know what I mean? But last year, I was, like, watching a bunch of old, like, early 90s Survivor Series, and, like, so I don't know why I bring that up, I don't even remember, but point is, I've seen them all, and outside of some of the modern ones from, like, you know, 2012 and on, let's just say, I've probably seen them multiple times over. But in my opinion, this one right here, the greatest Survivor Series of all time. I did break out the DVD off the shelf to show you guys today. I believe I have put this in a different case than the OG one that I had, because I think I broke the OG one back in the day, but I replaced it a couple years ago in a different case. But just the DVD artwork alone, with the Elimination Chamber guys on the front. Here's your side bend. And then on the back, you have your lineup, man. I miss freaking physical media collecting. DVD, who remembers DVD Tuesday in the wrestling community, if you will? You know, it was obviously there for pay-per-views as well, but nothing was more hyped than a DVD Tuesday, big upcoming documentary, three-disc sets coming out, like, oh, Tuesday, freaking, I think it was like September or something, 2011, that Randy Orton DVD is going to drop, and everybody's hyped, everyone's buying it, everyone's putting up their reviews of the DVD on YouTube. Good times, man. OGs remember DVD Tuesday, but there's your disc as well. Always going to pull out the DVDs if I have it to show you guys when we're talking about some RA stuff, but Survivor Series 2002, just an overall just phenomenal show, man. Like, let me go ahead and pull up the results, and I have my notes, of course, just so I remember here. I did just watch this show back a couple of days ago, so it is fresh in my memory, but only six matches, was supposed to be seven. It's actually listed on the DVD as well. Yeah, there it is right there. Goldust and Hurricane versus Lance Storm and William Regal, which if you go back and watch some of the like match card rundowns during like Raws and SmackDowns during this time leading up to this show, I believe that match was supposed to be on the main show, and then it probably just got bumped for time and ended up being on Sunday Night Heat. And you can't find it, at least I don't think, on Peacock. Maybe it's on there, but it is on the DVD, so in case you missed out on Goldust and Hurricane versus Storm and Regal, Go pick yourself up a copy of the Survivor Series 2002 DVD, and then you can watch it. But you just got a little bit of everything on this show, man. You got some hardcore stuff with, you know, Victoria and Trish. Of course, the first ever Elimination Chamber matchup. And obviously, we're going to break all this down. You got the tables match and the opening match. You have, in what is my opinion, and maybe I'm forgetting some stuff, but it just hits so well. The greatest, shortest match of all time. Greatest short match, whatever, Big Show and Lesnar, which, you know, goes like 4 minutes, 4 minutes, 19 seconds to be specific, according to Wikipedia. And then you got the real SmackDown main event following with the triple threat elimination tag with Los Guerreros, Edge and Rey, and Angle and Benoit, which was, you know, there's the SmackDown six, and this was like the legendary match that I don't want to say culminated that era, because obviously they continued forward for a while with those guys being centerfolds on SmackDown, but this was the big, you know, meeting at that time. It's just a great show, man. Like, there's not anything that just doesn't hit on this show. And again, you know, maybe it's my personal favorite Survivor Series of all time. Maybe I think it's the GOAT because of nostalgia, Ruthless Aggression, all that stuff. I'm not saying that doesn't play a factor. You know, somebody who grew up in the 90s, during the Golden Era, the New Generation, Attitude Era, you guys might prefer a different Survivor Series. That's all fine and dandy. I was doing a live stream the other night, and, you know, people were saying, I think 2016 is the greatest Survivor Series of all time. I think that's, you know, wild, but, like, they might have just started watching, you know, in the early 2010s, and that was, like, the GOAT to them. So, like, everybody's got their own opinions, but in my eyes, this is the one I see the most out there as people discuss as just the greatest Survivor Series of all time, and I'm definitely up there as well with that opinion. All right, so before we move forward and start breaking down Survivor Series 2002 and then breaking down some, or I should say branching off into some little discussions that I do want to have about this show and what was to come of it, what could have happened at the show, want to do a couple plugs real quick. Again, first things first, if you're watching here on YouTube, be sure to hit the subscribe button down below. Definitely just helps a lot growing the channel, as well as hitting that like button. Same thing, just helps us get us out there in the YouTube algorithm. And I want to reach not only as many wrestling fans, but as many ruthless aggression diehards like myself, people who grew up during this era, as possible. So let's spread the word out there. I'd really appreciate it. And whatever podcast platform you're watching on, whether it be Spotify, Apple, Google, some of the miscellaneous ones, most of them either have a follow button or a rating or something like that. So whatever the thing is to do on those platforms, be sure to follow as well. Never miss out on an episode of the podcast. Also, here on YouTube, I want to give a plug to the channel memberships that I just upgraded the other night. So there is two tiers that you can join and not only support me, but also get some perks in exchange. First thing is the Backstage Pass tier, which gives you access to a couple of badges and emojis you can use in live chats and comments. And I'm really looking forward to getting more channel members, because as we unlock, get more channel members, we unlock the ability to add more emojis, which I have a lot in mind. I want to add some Ruthless Aggression ones. So that's going to be a lot of fun. So you get that with the Backstage Pass. You also get discounted merchandise. So my merch store, link down below in the description. Any channel members, there will be a link. If it's not already there, I might have to put an updated one. But if you're a channel member, in the memberships tab on the YouTube channel, you'll be able to see a discount code that then you can go use on the merch store, which is only exclusive to you guys. So you get that. And you just get early access to videos here on the channel, whether it's podcast, just any normal video. Sometimes I literally make a video and then upload it right away, so then there's not a chance. But anytime there's a chance to give you guys early access to a video that's not going up for a day, a few days, you guys get to see it first. So that's what you get with the Backstage Pass. And then if you want to upgrade from that, we have the Premium Pass here on the Noah Nation Wrestling YouTube channel, which gives you all the previous perks as we just listed, and also a bonus episode of the Ruthless Discussions podcast each and every month, strictly here on YouTube. It won't be uploaded to the podcast platforms or anything like that. Won't be out to the public. It'll strictly be for Premium Pass channel members. At least one episode, one bonus Ruthless Discussion podcast episode a month. Maybe there'll be more, but I don't want to, tie myself to that just in case. Sometimes you get a busy week, a busy month, and time gets away from you. And I want to make sure, I'm giving just as much to the channel members as I am the people who just support in general. I appreciate it across the board. But if you're a Premium Pass holder, at least one bonus podcast a month. And that'll also be something you guys can get a little bit interactive with. I'll put up polls. I'll definitely ask you guys, what should we discuss on the podcast for the bonus episode this month. So if you become a Premium Pass holder, you get that access. But Backstage Pass, Premium Pass, just a couple of ways you guys can support right here on the Noah Nation Wrestling YouTube channel. All right, let's kick off our Survivor Series talk. First things first, what a theme song for this pay-per-view event. Ruthless Aggression Error. In my personal opinion, and it might be nostalgia again, just favoritism, whatever you want to call it, but just had the best pay-per-view theme songs, man. Outside of I think the fact that The Weeknd's about to go on like probably a 5-year streak of WrestleMania theme songs, I think that's hilarious and great at the same time. And I'm not saying we don't get a good theme here and there, but just as the music industry changes over the years, rock and roll, heavy metal, all that stuff was just in during this time, and it led to some awesome pay-per-view theme songs. Always by Saliva, which they played that song not live at Madison Square Garden, but not too far from the MSG in New York City at WWE New York, which is another place I never got to attend. I believe it was only open for a handful of years. I want to say like 2000 to 2003 or 4, something like that. And I think it got turned into like a Hard Rock something like that afterwards. But yeah, we saw that, saw them on the show, and they also played Chris Jericho to the ring. But it was kind of unique. They played Jericho to the ring later in the night with his King of the World theme song, which is on like one of the WWE CDs. You can find it on Apple Music. But they like were at MSG. They were still at the World. It's kind of unique in the sense, but my dog just came to hang out. Always by Saliva, your epic theme song for Survivor Series. But kicking off this show, we had the 6-man tag team tables matchup between 3-Minute Warning and Rico. Jamal, Rosie, and Rico taking on Bubba Ray, Spike Dudley, and Jeff Hardy. No, not D-Von Dudley. Even though, of course, we did end up seeing D-Von, but this is just a freaking car wreck of a matchup in the best way. And full disclaimer, let me start by this. Maybe it's the first time. Maybe you didn't watch the five episodes we did last year. I am not, and I say this during my reviews of current day as well, I'm not really your move-by-move breakdown guy when it comes to talking about wrestling, reviewing wrestling, if you will. I'll talk about some of the main spots, especially, you know, going back and talking about some of this stuff. But my thing is, like, how good was the match? What did it lead to? I really like diving into the storyline elements. There's just a full disclaimer, so you know what to expect if this is your first time watching the Ruthless Discussion podcast. But some of the big moments we did see in this match, obviously, goes without saying, the Jeff Hardy Swanton off the balcony. And, I mean, this is like one of the most iconic moments of Jeff Hardy's career. How many times was this Jeff Hardy Swanton put in video packages of Jeff for years to come in WWE? And, like, I know he did it at the Royal Rumble in 2000 as well, and then repeated it here. But one way or another, whichever one was getting shown, like, those MSG balcony Swantons, just freaking legendary. And he did it again here, and it was freaking awesome. Like, I mean, it's Jeff Hardy diving off a balcony through, I think he put Rosie through the table, correct me if I'm wrong. It was awesome. What probably the best elimination of this matchup, I gotta say, poor Spike Dudley. This dude made a career getting the shit beat out of him. Let's just call it what it is. Sometimes in just insane over-the-top ways, sometimes in, I almost dropped my pen, in like basic ways, but because he's just small, it just looks way worse, you know what I mean? But Jamal and Rosie each grab a leg of Spike Dudley and swing this guy up and over, freaking rib cage first through a table. Like, Spike Dudley, I hope that dude's doing well. You know, I hope he's feeling good, feeling healthy, because he got the shit beat out of him his entire wrestling career. Like, everybody's seen it. It's like, goes viral, I feel like, every 6 months on social media. The clip, I think it might be the Dudleys, actually, dumping Spike Dudley. Is it the Dudley? I don't know who it is. Somebody spiking, or throwing Spike Dudley over the top rope to go through a table, and Spike just completely misses the table and smacks his head on the table. Like, this dude, I hope he's doing well, because he got beat up, man. And this elimination was gnarly, dude. I remember one of the first times watching this Survivor Series 2002. I don't want to say it was the first time, because I don't remember. Maybe it was like me and my uncle rewatching it like years later, probably leading up to a Survivor Series, and us just cracking up at how bad we felt for Spike Dudley. Like, damn, dude, that had to suck. Just rib cage first through the table. Absolutely gnarly. And then people, they were really just laying in these table bumps during this matchup. Jeff Hardy does that spot where he runs up on the barricade and then goes to dive on his opponent. But Jamal, like, I don't think he meant to, like, throw the table out, because they didn't call it as, like, an elimination. So I don't think it probably went the way it was supposed to, or the table probably wasn't supposed to break. But Jamal, like, puts the table up. Jamal, a.k.a. Umaga, rest in peace to the legend, puts, like, the table up to block Jeff Hardy. And Jeff's head just freaking leaves the biggest indent in the table. And like I said, they didn't call it as an elimination, because I don't think it was supposed to end that way. Or maybe it was, because, like, Maybe they thought the table would literally completely shatter, and that way they'd be able to call elimination, but since it just kind of made, like, a big indent, I don't know. Either way, they followed it up with Jeff Hardy laying on the table, and Jamal absolutely doing what they would end up doing 5 years later with Umaga just beating the shit out of Jeff Hardy, what felt like every week on Raw for a while. Jamal doing a big-time Samoan Uso splash off the top to the outside of the ring, crushing Jeff Hardy through this table. Like, the bumps in this match were freaking insane. Somehow, and again, I'm not calling all the eliminations here, but somehow we get down to just Rico and Bubba Ray Dudley. I think Bubba powerbombs Jamal through one table. Rosie was obviously already eliminated, but then they both come back in. Rosie was eliminated from the Jeff Hardy Swanton. Rosie and Jamal both come back in with Rico. Rico just cracks me up for some reason. I don't know why. And they just start beating down on Bubba Ray Dudley. Just like, F the rules. And then one of the biggest pops of the night, D-Von Dudley re-emerging, coming through the small entrance at Madison Square Garden, which I freaking love. I didn't really mention it yet, but I love, that's another reason why I love the Survivor Series, just the vibe, immaculate, because of that small entrance. But D'Von Dudley comes busting through there, making the save. And obviously, it was a big deal because the Dudleys have been split up for, you know, what, 6, 7 months at this point. D'Von went to SmackDown in the draft. Bubba was on Raw. And it obviously just wasn't working. Like, Bubba, I think if this was like Bully Ray, TNA Bubba, he would have been fine. But at the time, nobody wanted to see Bubba Ray Dudley as a singles guy. And then D'Von over on SmackDown completely became a different guy, Reverend D'Von. And it just didn't really work out either for either of them. So I think it was the best call at the time to reunite them and send D'Von to Raw. But D'Von comes out there making the save. And him and Bubba do the old 3D in the middle of Madison Square Garden to Rico through a table to win the matchup. Of course, no disqualification, so it doesn't really matter that D'Von got involved in the action, but awesome moment and just a hot way to start the show. And again, like, you just had to reunite the Dudleys at that time. Like, they gave it a run, it just didn't work out. D'Von especially, like, Bubba was still in the mix on Raw. Like, I think he was like competing for the hardcore title during the summer. I remember at one point he goes like face to face with Triple H when Triple H is the world heavyweight champion. But at the end of the day, like, it just wasn't. At least Bubba still had the essence of the Dudleys, but he was just by himself. D'Von was a Reverend D'Von, which, that, you know, how far was that going to go? So the Dudleys reuniting here definitely just made the most sense in the world. Just a hot way to start this show. And then, you know, one thing I love about the Ruthless Aggression era, man, is the cruiserweight division. And not that it was always the most important thing, because a lot of times it wasn't. And a lot of times when you saw some of these cruiserweights, you know, outside of like Rey Mysterio, maybe Chavo and stuff like that, a lot of times when you saw these cruiserweights branch out of the division, they would just get squashed. So, like, it didn't really make them look the best. But when the cruiserweights themselves got the chance to go out there and tear it up, boy, did they do it, man. And again, it's not just Rey Mysterio or Chavo or some of the, like, the well-known guys of that division, even though I would say Billy Kidman and Jamie Noble, two of the faces of the WWE era cruiserweight division during that time. And again, man, like, just set them out there, let them loose, freaking tore it up. Like, an 8 minute or so, just banger, man. Like, these guys went out there, and it literally popped in my head during the match. I was like, this feels like a match that you would see nowadays in, like, you know, NXT Black and Gold back in, like, a few years ago, or like an AEW. I'm not saying you wouldn't see it on WWE television now, but at some point they're just going back and forth, just crazy move for crazy move. I'm pretty sure Jamie Noble did this DDT to Billy Kidman, like, off the top rope and just spiked Billy Kidman's head. You know what's awesome? First off, we're going to jump around here. I apologize. This is how my mind works. First off, this is the debut of Billy Kidman's You Can Run But You Can't Hide theme song. That theme song freaking slaps. It is on the gym playlist. There's a separate wrestling gym playlist, and it is in there. That's just awesome. And also, another thing, everyone remembers Billy Kidman for the Shooting Star Press, obviously. But you know what else Billy Kidman had in his moveset that just looked awesome? Was the Spine Buster. And, like, he would do the more, like, high elevated one. I don't know what the specifics are called. But he had a Spine Buster in his arsenal, and he did it to Jamie Noble, and it just looked awesome. Like, Noble, awesome, out there with Nydia as the Cruiserweight Champion. Jean Shorts, God, I freaking love these guys, dude. Freaking Ruthless Aggression era Cruiserweights. Noble, Kidman, Paul London, you know, who else? Tajiri. Just after this is when Nunzio starts coming involved. Obviously, Little Guido jumping to WWE. Well, not that he was, like, in ECW because they were dead by the time, but you guys get what I mean. I just love the Cruiserweight division at this time, man. And this match, literally, like, 8 minute banger. Is that literally what it is? 7 minutes, 30 seconds. I just wrote down 8 minute banger. That's literally my notes for this match. Kidman versus Noble was 8 minute banger. That's what I wrote for my notes on this matchup. And I'm looking at Wikipedia, 7 minutes and 30 seconds. Awesome stuff. Billy Kidman wins the Cruiserweight Championship. I think Nydia gets knocked down at some point. Kidman, off, like, finally the third attempt in the match, is able to hit the Shooting Star Press, which just looks awesome. Was Kidman the first one to do a Shooting Star in WWE? I feel like maybe, like, Jeff Hardy might have just pulled it out in, like, a random SmackDown or some shit during the Attitude Era, because he would just do random stuff like that. And maybe, like, Taka Michinoku or something. I don't know, like, some of those random, like, maybe moments. But was Billy Kidman the first one to really use the Shooting Star Press? Like, after him, it was, like, Evan Bourne several years later. You know, Ricochet uses it now. Somebody else might. But Billy Kidman Shooting Star Press, in my eyes, because maybe it's probably because the first time I seen it as well back in the day. The OG, and I love Billy Kidman. I know he's, I think he's like a producer now, as is Jamie Noble. Good for them, because they're awesome. But Billy Kidman won the Cruiserweight title here. Also loved the design of the Cruiserweight title back then, man. Just looked absolutely beautiful. You know what always irked me when I go back and watch, like, 2002? And they didn't change it till, like, sometime in 03. But for so long, you know how they'll show, like, the graphic of the title on the screen before the match starts? It'll be what the hell am I saying? Like, the plates or something will come in. The Cruiserweight title or something like that. For so long in 2002, they just kept using the graphic of the WCW Cruiserweight title. Like, and we're well into having a new Cruiserweight Championship by the 2002 Survivor Series with the WWE logo, like the one that we're all thinking about right now. It always irks me when I go back. I'm like, what took them so long to change the graphic for the title? They did the same thing with, like, the Raw World Tag Team titles. Like, it took them so long to just get them a new graphic. Like, I know it's 2002. They ain't working as fast as they are now with the technology, but it wasn't the Stone Age. Like, I don't know why it took them so long to update those graphics. It always irks me. I always question, like, why are they showing the WCW Cruiserweight Championship when we've had a new WWE Cruiserweight Championship for months? I don't know. Just complaining. Nonetheless, up next on this show, we had a hardcore match for the WWE Women's Championship, Trish Stratus versus Victoria. You know, I gotta say, for 2002, this is a hell of a matchup. And I say for 2002, because, like, this is obviously, you know, if there's one thing about the Ruthless Aggression era and then previous to that Attitude era and you know, and so on, you know, women's division, women's wrestling, not really so prominent. You obviously had some highlights here and there. You can go back and find a solid match here and there. Trish and Lita, main event and Raw, all that stuff. But, like, The standards weren't high. No, nobody really cared. 2002, though, this was a half-decent match. Like, it wasn't, like, knockdown, drag-out, amazing. I'll be honest, I was watching this, and I kind of went, I remember this being a little bit better than it was. But maybe, again, I was just like, I don't know, maybe I just forgot. I don't know. But it was good for 2002, man. A little bit sloppy at times. But, again, was anybody really... Women's wrestling at the time, like, I don't really think too many people cared that much. This felt like, you know, a somewhat big match feel. I will say, they showed Victoria just being crazy in the backstage area beforehand with, like, a weird shot with, like, the camera through the roof, like, looking down into her locker room. That was definitely a Vince McMahon call. Freaking creep. And then they showed a video package for this showing Victoria being, like, crazy and beating the hell out of Trish and whatever the fuck her name was. But it felt like a big fight feel. It just, and the match again was half decent for what it was. They used some kendo sticks, trash can. I think Victoria pulled out a broom at some point. And then, you know what's funny? Victoria pulls out a mirror from underneath the ring, which is, like, part of her thing at the time. And then I don't know if it's supposed to be used in a spot. I always thought this and I remembered it when I watched, like, I don't know if it's supposed to be used in a spot and then it got fucked up because Victoria puts the mirror in the ring and then Trish, like, looks like she accidentally steps on it, like, a minute later and shatters the mirror. So, like, I don't know if they were planning on using the mirror as, like, some crazy spot and it got fucked up because it was already broken, or if it was supposed to be, like, a Trish stepped on the mirror and it gave her bad luck type thing, like, or they literally were just trying to tease it and it meant nothing. Like, I always wondered which one it was. But the finish of this matchup, I gotta say, a little bit set. We couldn't have thought of anything else. Like, I know it's a hardcore rules match, and again, like, nobody was, like, raving about women's wrestling crazy at the time. But Victoria goes under the ring to get a fire extinguisher. She, like, fails the first time to use it, and Trish has to pretend she didn't see it. Then she finally gets it, and she fire extinguisher to Trish. Then Victoria comes back in the ring, just hits a snap suplex on Trish, and pins her and wins the women's title. It's like, that's all we got for the finish? Well, I don't know. Was that Victoria's finish at the time? Was she using the freaking, what's it called? Widow's Peak or whatever the move is called? I don't remember. But I always thought that was, like, weird. Like, I don't know if they were going for, like, oh, surprise. Like, she got the fire extinguisher. And then the first move she did, Trish was so just disheveled that she couldn't kick out. I don't know, it was a little bit silly, but I will say, again, even though I feel like I remember the match being better than it was on this rewatch, giving credit where credit's due, for 2002, they still had a half-decent matchup. They honestly beat each other up pretty hard during the match with with the weapon. So, you know, credit where credit's due. I take nothing away. Victoria winning the women's title off a good old suplex. And that's Survivor Series. Good night. Yeah, man. But we followed that up with, again, maybe it's just because I don't have everything, you know, right here between my ears. But it may be the greatest, shortest match of all time. The Undisputed WWE Championship on the line. Brock Lesnar with Paul Heyman versus The Big Show. And might I say, man, you know, I've watched all of the SmackDowns and Raws from the Ruthless Aggression era, but I've really watched 2002 after the draft a lot because I just really like that time period, especially on SmackDown. And just the video package beforehand really reminded me, like, they didn't, not that it was like, well, I don't want to say it wasn't anything too crazy because there was some crazy spots, but the build for Brock versus Big Show was pretty awesome, man. Like, it's hot off Brock beating The Undertaker in Hell in a Cell, and him being just beat up from that matchup plays into a big factor in not only the build to this match, but Paul Heyman turning on him. But Big Show showing up, press slamming Undertaker off the stage, does the same thing to Lesnar. Lesnar's got tape ribs. They show, and you see this during the video package, but it obviously happened on SmackDown. They show at one point Lesnar rushing down to ringside, freaking with white Adidas pants on and his ribs taped and just looking like a freaking badass, and just nails the Big Show with a steel chair shot, and it looked awesome, dude. I was like, man, the build to Lesnar and Show, which was probably, I think, 4 weeks long, depending on, I might have made 3, 4, 5 weeks, whatever it was awesome, man. It makes me want to go now rewatch some of those SmackDowns in full to really, you know, relive that build. But it all led up to, again, Paul Heyman turning on Lesnar in this match, because Heyman didn't want Lesnar to take the fight. You know, he kept trying to help Brock Lesnar, be like, dude, you don't know the damage that Hell in a Cell did to you yet. You're not ready to fight the Big Show, all this stuff. And Lesnar just wasn't having it, and eventually led to Heyman turning his back on Brock. But this matchup, man, Big Show comes out first, which this may be my favorite Big Show look of all time. The singlet straps, but then the long pants over top the singlet. I always thought that was a badass Big Show look. Probably my favorite Big Show look of all time. I always wondered, like, I wonder if he got rid of it because it was a little bit too similar, maybe, to The Undertaker. But whatever. And then Brock Lesnar, just the vibe when Lesnar's music hits. Lights go down. You just see the green, the mini green MSG entrance. And you see Lesnar's shadow just getting pumped off. And I'm like, dude, it's so awesome, man. Like, the atmosphere, the aura. That's a big word everybody's remembering is in the dictionary recently on social media. The aura around Brock Lesnar when he was making his way down the aisle that night. So awesome. And again, this matchup kicks off and it's literally 4 minutes long. But the crowd is hot and heavy during the whole thing. Big Show's ragdolling Lesnar. We see Lesnar, I believe, a German belly-to-belly on Big Show. They're just beating the hell out of each other, throwing each other around the ring for like the first two minutes of this match. And the crowd's eating up, man. The crowd is red hot for this Undisputed title matchup. And then the ref ends up getting knocked down at some point. Brock Lesnar's like, well, screw it. You know, Brock's the babyface here, but obviously, like, it's Brock Lesnar. He doesn't give a damn. So he gets a steel chair, or Heyman might have gave him this chair, and just once again just murks Big Show in the head with an unprotected steel chair shot. If that happened this day and age, people would be on social media crying the freaking, safety police would be like, oh, he's an idiot. He's going to die. Yeah, I'm making it. It's just a joke. But yeah, he just absolutely nailed the shit out of Big Show with a steel chair. And then Lesnar, one of the big questions during this, you know, build up, this is, you know, 2002, Lesnar had yet to hit anybody. Well, I mean, Rikishi, yeah, Mark, you get the point, but he's yet to hit the Big Show with an F5, and could he do it? And after that chair shot, Big Show's dazed. Lesnar picks up Big Show, F5 in the middle of Madison Square Garden, crowd's popping huge. Lesnar goes for the cover. New referee runs out after the original one got knocked down. 1, 2. Heyman pulls out the ref. You rotten son of a bitch. Lesnar's like, you mother effer. Heyman's looking like a scared little boy. And Lesnar starts chasing him around ringside. Follows him into the ring. Only for Big Show to catch him with, I believe, a steel chair shot to the gut. One to the back. lays down the chair, choke slam on the chair, gets rid of the evidence. Referee, I think the original one, crawls back in for the 1-2. Brock Lesnar suffers his first loss in WWE thanks to a New York screw job by Paul Heyman and the Big Show. And they knew they messed up. They scurried out of there. They showed Heyman and the Big Show getting in a car, leave at MSG. They got the hell out of Dodge from what was going to be a furious Brock Lesnar. And that ended up playing into, you know, weeks on SmackDown. Lesnar was going nuts. I think Stephanie McMahon, like, suspended him or banned him from being at Armageddon or something. I have to go back and watch to completely refresh my memory. But it's just an awesome freaking 10-12 minutes between the video packages, the entrances, and the match itself and the aftermath. Michael Cole and Taz just sold us like $1 million on commentary. And it was great, man. And especially for Lesnar's first loss in the WWE when he had come off beating The Undertaker in Hell in a Cell, The Rock at SummerSlam, RVD in the finals of King of the Ring. All this stuff, like, they executed it in a way where it was like, all right, Lesnar lost, but he got screwed by Heyman. And it was the real kickoff to the road to WrestleMania 19 for Brock Lesnar. Paul Heyman turns on him, goes with the Big Show, then Heyman ends up going with Angle, and then we start the build to Lesnar winning the Rumble. First we get Lesnar and Show Part 2 at the Royal Rumble, which Lesnar, of course, wins and then enters the Royal Rumble match. We get that. Lesnar wins the Rumble. Goes on to fight Angle at Mania, and, you know, the rest is history. This was the kickoff to all of it. But one thing I wanted to talk about Lesnar and Big Show. You know, there's a rumor for the longest time out there that, and I say that in the sense of, like, I'm sure it is true and people have talked about it before, but there was a rumor that WWE wanted to do Brock Lesnar versus Hulk Hogan for the WWE Championship at Survivor Series in Madison Square Garden in 2002. And the whole reason, evidently, that it didn't happen was the fact that Hulk Hogan wanted to go over, defeat Brock Lesnar, and become the Undisputed Champion. Now, couple of things. Like, Hogan, this is Hulk Hogan in 2002. He's hot off WrestleMania 18. Literally, I mean, obviously he had gone off TV in July, which we'll talk about. But, like, hot off WrestleMania 18. Fans love him, getting one of the biggest pops of the night, bringing back red and yellow, beats Triple H at Backlash for the Undisputed title, which Triple H had that title for like literally a month, and obviously there's some shenanigans in the match. I think Jericho gets involved, Taker gets involved, and all that stuff, but Hogan ends up winning, and obviously loses the title the following month at Judgment Day. Seeing Hogan win the Undisputed title twice in 2002, first defeating a prime Triple H, and then defeating a young, dominant Brock Lesnar at full strength, you know? Well, I guess not at full strength because he was off the Hell in a Cell match, but, you know, still, same thing. Would have been a little over the top. Like, I understand WWE, and I commend, you know, them or whoever, you know, made the decision, even if it was Vinnie Mac, for not being like, yeah, sure, Hogan, you can come in and beat, you know, the next big thing in Brock Lesnar. Because that obviously wouldn't have been the right idea, especially because if that happens, Hogan beats Lesnar, you kind of derail everything that I just said about how this kicked off the road to WrestleMania 19. Sure, you could maybe get back on track, you know, Hogan lose the title to Kurt Angle, just like Big Show did at Armageddon, and Angle becomes WWE champion, you know, but then even if you do that, like, how do you get Heyman away from Lesnar to get that split? Like, Hogan being there would have caused a lot of change in what ended up being, in my opinion, you know, a great road to WrestleMania for Lesnar, and then obviously led to the Lesnar-Angle matchup. But I will say, it would have been pretty cool to see Hogan and Lesnar in the middle of Madison Square Garden. 2002, Lesnar's red hot, Hogan's red hot, WWE titles on the line, it's MSG, it's Hogan. That would have been a pretty crazy atmosphere, man. And especially because they kind of set this up, you know, and whether they meant to or not, because the last time we saw Hulk Hogan in 2002, he was getting taken out by Brock Lesnar. We don't see Hogan again until 03, but we might have saw him in the lead-up to Survivor Series had he come back to challenge Lesnar and get his revenge for being put on the shelf and challenge him for the WWE Championship. They kind of laid the groundwork for it without maybe purposely doing it. I don't know if they did it on purpose or if Lesnar, you know, Lesnar was just beating up everybody at that time, so that may have just been the case, but I don't know, man. Like, I'm glad they went with the decision that they went with Big Show defeating Lesnar grander story, got the win that time. But there is part of me that goes, that would have been a crazy atmosphere that night in MSG. Like, that, like, this already is a amazing Survivor Series, first Elimination Chamber. And, you know, one of the reasons this show, I think, is great is because of this pretty legendary match between Sho and Lesnar, in my opinion, that, again, is, I think, the greatest, shortest match of all time. But if you swap it for Lesnar and Hogan, yeah, I'm sure it goes longer than 4 minutes. I think just the atmosphere, just like WrestleMania 18 in a sense, with Hogan and Rock, like that atmosphere was just so crazy that it makes the match 10 times better. Like Hogan and Lesnar 2002, Hogan could still go a little bit. For Hogan standards, you know what I mean? It would have been pretty crazy to see. I can't lie. I don't know how close they were to getting that. Like, I don't know if there was any back and forth. Like, listen, Hogan, like, just come do the match. You're not going to win the title, but then we'll do this for you. Like, I want to know how close they were to getting that done and if Big Show was kind of a last-minute decision. Because Big Show was on Raw, remember? Big Show was on Raw up until he shows up on SmackDown. And this is during a time where, like, there was, like, an open thing. Like, listen, if you don't want to be on the show, you can... Yeah, obviously, kayfabe, I'm not talking about, like, behind the scenes. If you don't want to be on the show, get the fuck out. But, like, Big Show, he's disgruntled with the spot on Raw, so he goes and signs with SmackDown instead. And then eventually that, like, closes, and you can no longer jump ship. I think before Survivor Series, like, sometime in October, and Sho takes advantage and jumps to SmackDown. But I do wonder if Sho was, like, a last-minute plan, like, if Hogan was the plan all along. And again, just how it changed things. And I could really see, like, we're talking about how it would have changed plans. Like, Hogan, they kind of set that up with Lesnar during the summer. Hogan and Angle fought earlier that year at King of the Ring. So imagine we get that. And I believe Angle beat Hulk Hogan. So Angle beats Hogan, and then we get Hogan and Angle at Armageddon for the title, and Angle beats him again. The only caveat is, how does now Lesnar and Heyman split up? You know, I don't know how you get there. And how would they have gone about the match at Survivor Series? Would there have been some shenanigans like there was in the Hogan Triple H match to maybe make it look a little less, you know, questionable that an old man is beating, you know, a guy in their absolute prime of their career? I don't know, but it is interesting to think about, and I can't help but just question what that would have been like in 2002. It probably would have been an absolutely insane atmosphere for Lesnar versus Hogan for the WWE title in Madison Square Garden. But like I said, even though Sho and Lesnar, Undisputed Title match, great stuff, the real SmackDown main event on this show was the triple threat elimination for the WWE Tag Team titles. Edge and Rey Mysterio defending against Kurt Angle and Chris Benoit, as well as Chavo and Eddie Guerrero. It's the SmackDown 6, man, the infamous SmackDown 6, and literally how many combinations of all of these guys did we get? I mean, every single week on SmackDown from like the summer up until early 03, when, you know, Edge gets hurt and, like, things start going in different directions. These guys were intertwined literally for, like, 6 months on SmackDown, at least. We'd get Eddie versus Rey. We'd get Edge versus Eddie. We'd get Angle versus Benoit. And then they'd team up. And then I remember one week on SmackDown, I think it was, like, September of 02, getting Angle versus Benoit. And then they added in Rey, made it a triple threat just because they were in San Diego. The amount of great action we got from these six guys during that time, like, well, what a time. What a time period on SmackDown that really helped establish all of these names to the next level. Like, obviously, Angle had already been a WWE champion at that point. He was already a main event guy. But, like, the SmackDown 6 era really helped elevate Edge, taking him to the next step and growing his popularity as a singles guy. For Rey Mysterio coming in from WCW to WWE and basically immediately being thrown into the mix versus Chavo in his debut. Then just weeks later is fighting Kurt Angle at SummerSlam. And then literally from there is a made man on SmackDown. Special time for Friday Night SmackDown, man. Something that I don't think will ever be duplicated again. Just six different guys, all immensely talented. Just something that I think, again, I just don't think you'll ever see duplicated again. And having this matchup at Survivor Series with all six of them in there, WWE Tag Team titles on the line, which was technically a brand new championship because obviously the World Tag Team titles were fully assigned to Raw. Stephanie McMahon introduces these belts for the tag division on SmackDown. For fighting over those new championships with all six of these guys, just adding to the prestige of those titles, which is great, and they just absolutely tore it up. Again, this was an elimination matchup, so Angle and Benoit went first, and then the Guerreros ended up beating Edge and Rey to leave as the tag team champions. But talking won't do it justice, man. Like, and same thing with all the other matches that we've talked about on SmackDown, and the Edge and Rey versus Angle and Benoit at No Mercy in 02, a couple weeks later in the 2 out of 3 falls. I believe we get Benoit and Eddie one-on-one at Armageddon. Of course, Angle goes on to fight Big Show for the title. Rey goes out with injury with a couple weeks later, and Edge ends up fighting, A-Train at Armageddon. But just talking about the moves and all this stuff and the matches themselves just doesn't do it justice, man. There was just a certain energy with everything. Not just, you know, I was talking about like the atmosphere of Madison Square Garden, but just every week on SmackDown, Taz and Michael Cole calling the action, making these guys seem like a million bucks. And of course, this was the time during Paul Heyman writing for Friday Night SmackDown. And, you know, he's talked about that a ton of time and how he would, you know, try to elevate talent, intermingle main event guys with lower card guys. So now you have more main eventers and all this stuff. I know we're kind of branching off from the match itself, but just talking about that whole time period, SmackDown 6, absolutely legendary. And again, this match was just freaking awesome, man. To say the least, the real SmackDown main event. We had some awesome action in this thing that, again, words just don't do justice. Eddie Guerrero, Chavo Guerrero, Eddie tapped out Rey in the end to win the tag team titles. This was also playing into Angle and Benoit splitting apart. This is really kind of the end of the Angle-Benoit team after they had been feuding, came together, won the tag team titles, lost the tag team titles, and then lost this matchup. We just had some miscommunication. I believe Benoit had Edge, I want to say, locked in the crossface. I think Eddie hit Benoit in the back with a tag team title and then threw the title at Kurt Angle, so it made it seem like Angle hit Benoit with the title, because obviously they were the dysfunctional duo during this time. And then I think somebody takes advantage. I think Edge ends up spearing Benoit or something. Something like that. They just, you know, they're arguing, and Edge and Rey, I think, take advantage, and then Benoit and Angle just argue out of the arena. And that's how they go, man. But I absolutely love this matchup. It's one of those matches where, even if I'm not watching this whole show, I'll just go back and watch it because it's just super fun. And just, again, what led to this, you know, I think the following Thursday on SmackDown, we had, like, just talk about the next chapter in the SmackDown 6 era. I think the following Thursday on SmackDown, we had a four-way, I want to say, that where Angle won to become the number one contender for the WWE title. I think it was Angle, Benoit, Eddie, and Edge, I want to say, was in the four-way, which just, like, come on, dude, you're just getting that on a random Thursday night on SmackDown in 2002, like, how lucky could you be? Just be like, oh, I'm going to tune on SmackDown tonight. What do we got? Click. Oh, Edge, Angle, Benoit, and Eddie. Like, my God, what a time. But, yeah, again, words don't do it justice. I freaking love this matchup. That's all I can say, man. But moving on with Survivor Series. Before we get into the main event, we did have a segment on this show, which was probably the peak of Scott Steiner's WWE return, unfortunately. We had good old Christopher Nowitzki out there. There's going to be very few people who remember that guy. from 2002, Monday Night Raw superstar out there just talking trash on New York. You know, just getting that good old cheap heat. Then Matt Hardy from SmackDown. Matt Hardy, version 1, comes out there and joins in, but they have a disagreement. You know, Matt Hardy, I forget who thought what. I think Matt Hardy thinks New Yorkers are losers. Christopher Nowitzki thinks they're stupid. And then they agree that New Yorkers are loopit. They made a word up, did these two genius heels. And it, of course, all leads to the return of Scott Steiner. Was this the return of Scott Steiner? Well, why do I feel like he was on Raw and SmackDown leading up? Or was that afterwards? Yeah, I think it was afterwards, and they were kind of fighting for where Steiner was going to sign. That ends up being, okay. I know what I'm talking about here. Just because it was 21 years ago, I know what I'm talking about here. It says Scott Steiner debuts on the back, but that's technically incorrect. Doesn't matter. Scott Steiner shows up, beats the shit out of Christopher Nowitzki and Matt Hardy to a monstrous pop in Madison Square Garden, and gets the mic. This one goes out to all my freaks out there, blah, blah, blah. It was awesome. And again, unfortunately, that was pretty much the peak of this run for Scott Steiner. Goes on to fight Triple H at the Rumble and No Way Out in two pretty horrendous matches. You know, I love the Ruthless Aggression era, but I'll call it what it is. Not good matches. I just watched the match with Triple H last year, because I rewatched the entire 2003 Rumble show, and it's just not good. It's just not good, man. It's a shame. Like, I don't know. I don't even know what to say. Maybe we'll just save, like, what went wrong with Scott Steiner, what went wrong with, like, a lot of the WCW guys, you know, that Triple H just beat up on throughout 2003. Maybe we'll do a bonus episode on that or something, but it was a hot segment. It was a hot segment, you know, for what it was. But, of course, we all lead in to the main event, the first ever Elimination Chamber match for the World Heavyweight Championship. Do yourself a favor. You know, everybody always talks that the My Way Rock versus Austin WrestleMania 17 video package is the greatest video package of all time. I will not argue. Another one that is up there is the Shawn Michaels Undertaker one from WrestleMania 26. Another banger. But in my opinion, the video package for this Elimination Chamber match, Survivor Series 02, as well, a freaking banger, dude. It is awesome. Always by Saliva playing, telling the story of the creation of the Elimination Chamber, how we got here, just gives me goosebumps every time I watch it. Just one of those things. I'll go on video package like bins on YouTube sometimes, and that's always one that I put on. I freaking love that one. Go if you've never seen it or you haven't watched it in a while, pull it up on YouTube, man. Do yourself a favor and watch the 2 minutes or whatever it is of the video package. It's going to get you fired up, and then you're going to want to go watch this matchup, which you're doing yourself a favor, because in my opinion, I'm not going to say this is the greatest Elimination Chamber match of all time. I really don't know what Elimination Chamber match I would call as the greatest of all time. Honestly, the United States Championship one from this year is definitely in, like, the top five. Absolutely, like, they killed it this year, but this is definitely in the top five as well. The inaugural Elimination Chamber match, you know, you're going in there with, like, with kind of no expectations outside of the fact that you're just excited to see what's going to be going on. And, you know, it is pretty crazy looking back, because, like, they've obviously modified the Elimination Chamber, and listen, as much as I, like the Ruthless Aggression era and like the badassery, I'm all for them, you know, modifying the Elimination Chamber to its current day form, so it's not as brutal on the human body as it used to be. But the fact that these guys were taking full-on bumps on these steel grates at ringside that do not give, do not budge. It's not like, even like the ring where there's maybe a little bit of bounce. It's just steel. It's kind of crazy looking back at it. Like, how many people got effed up in this chamber is insane. And, like, going into this match, when the Raw eye watching this for the first time in 2002, not knowing what the Elimination Chamber was probably like, holy shit, dude, these guys, like, I thought Hell in a Cell was brutal. These guys are literally taking full-on back bumps on steel, and it ain't given at all. Like, it's not like a cage even. Like, there is, like, a little bit of a give to a cell or cage wall. Like, it's crazy. Obviously, the chamber walls, like, give a little bit, but it's still, it's freaking chain link. Like, huh? I don't know who technically thought of the chamber matchup, if it was a combination of Eric Bischoff and Vince McMahon or whatever the hell, but it was freaking awesome. But of course, this matchup was for the World Heavyweight Championship, Triple H defending against Rob Van Dam, Booker T, Chris Jericho, Kane, and the Heartbreak Kid, Shawn Michaels. And Shawn Michaels' only second matchup in 4 years. The first one, of course, was him and Triple H at SummerSlam, and then he comes back for the Elimination Chamber. And I'll talk about how one of my only disappointments here is that we had a short Shawn Michaels reign as world champion. But just to run down the order of entry as well as the order of elimination, RVD and Triple H start in this matchup, followed by Chris Jericho, then Booker T, then Kane, and then Shawn Michaels coming out last. And then the order of elimination, RVD eliminated by Booker T, Booker T eliminated by Chris Jericho, Kane eliminated by Chris Jericho, who took, like, I think a super kick, a pedigree, and then a lion salt, and then Jericho pinned them. I believe Jericho also pinned Booker T with the lion salt there. So really utilizing that old lion salt was Y2J in this matchup. Jericho got hit with a super kick by Shawn Michaels as he had the Walls of Jericho in on Triple H, and then Michaels pinned Jericho, and then obviously Shawn Michaels defeating Triple H in the end. But just such a good chamber match, man. Like, you had RVD with the frog splash, if I can get it out, off the Elimination Chamber pod, which is infamous for freaking shattering Triple H's something in his throat. I forget what the word is, but so point is, messed up Triple H. Like, and it's kind of insane because that frog splash happens pretty early on, and RVD's knee just hits Triple H right in the throat, and then Triple H on record is like basically saying like he barely could breathe throughout this matchup. But that happens like early on. This is a 40-minute Elimination Chamber matchup. I'd be willing to bet that that Frog Splash happens in like the first 15 minutes. I mean, I think it does happen in the first 15 minutes because Triple H and RVD start, Booker T comes in, and then it happens during, Chris Jericho comes in, but then it happens during when Jericho is in the match before Booker T, like that 5 minutes is when the Frog Splash is. And then Triple H wrestles till the end, barely being able to breathe. Like, that is crazy, dude. Like, that's just one of the most infamous things about this chamber. And then one of the other things, man, like, the pods being broken, like, just absolutely shattering. And this is one thing that maybe I'm wrong about, but I feel like nowadays the pods, when they get broken in spots during the chamber matches, like, it just kind of looks like the plexiglass or whatever just pops out of place. Still looks sick, don't get me wrong. Awesome spot, always fun to see. But during this match, man, those pods were just exploding into like a million pieces. I want to say Jericho went through one at one point. Maybe Kane threw him through it or something like that. Or no. That might have happened as well, but the one that I'm thinking of is Triple H slingshotting Shawn Michaels through a pod, and that thing just absolutely explodes. It looks gnarly, man. It just literally into like four pieces goes the bulletproof plexiglass, whatever the hell it was. Just a sick spot there. This is just a badass chamber match. Everybody's getting beat up. Everybody was bleeding, I think, besides Kane and... Maybe I'm wrong about that. Maybe just Jericho, Shawn Michaels, and Triple H. All right, half the field. You caught me red hand. Half the field was red. But then we get Shawn Michaels and Triple H, in the end. Shawn, you know what's also funny about this match before I talk about that? This match is literally just a roster of people Triple H had beaten in 2002/2003. Like, this is hot off him beating Kane at No Mercy. He had beaten RVD at Unforgiven. Him and Shawn Michaels, obviously, this is like during their program. Him and Jericho, WrestleMania 18, and then the Hell in a Cell match. You kind of look back, and I was thinking about this during this match, is like Triple H beats everybody in here of like before WrestleMania 19, and it just makes you wonder, like, man, Booker would have just won that match at WrestleMania 19. Because, like, and this is, like, another discussion maybe for another time. If we talk about the Mania, we can get into it here as well. Sidetracking here. We're gonna get a lot of sidetracking during the podcast. I always wonder what the decision was for Booker not winning at WrestleMania 19. And some may say, ah, Triple H just wanted to bury him. And maybe that was the case. I don't know. But I like to just fantasy, you know, think in my head. Because, like, 2002 is the year of Triple H beating all the WCW guys, right? Scott Steiner, Booker T, Kevin Nash, Goldberg, even though Goldberg wins the title, but then Triple H wins it back. Like, he just beat all the WCW guys in 2003. And I wonder if Goldberg coming into the WWE and them obviously knowing, like, yeah, we're basically going to catapult this guy right to the main event and he's going to win the world title. I wonder if Goldberg coming in affected what happened at WrestleMania 19, because Goldberg shows up the next night on Raw, and again, I could be completely wrong here, maybe had nothing to do about that, maybe Triple H just wanted to hold the belt, and that's very much a possibility, but, like, I wonder, like, if they were like, well, we can't have Booker win here, because Triple H needs to hold it for a long time, so when Goldberg wins, it's a bigger deal, but, like, maybe if Goldberg wasn't gonna be there, and then, like, obviously The Rock was only around for another month, and, like, Triple H had beaten everybody else, maybe Booker would have got his moment at WrestleMania 19. I just couldn't help but think about that during the matchup when looking at the field and going, Triple H beat Jericho, Kane, RVD, Shawn, and then he goes on to beat Booker T as well at WrestleMania 19. I don't know. I was just thinking about that while I was rewatching this matchup. Just some food for thought. And I'll tell you what, we could have talked about this earlier, but it just popping in my head as we're talking about world title matches that, could have happened or how things, could have possibly went different in 2003 on Raw, especially with Triple H being the world champ. You know, Jeff Hardy, red hot at this time, right? Popularity, obviously not maybe the heights it would eventually get, but Jeff Hardy's still one of the most popular guys. I mean, 2002 was him and Undertaker, undisputed title match in the ladder match. And, well documented that Jeff Hardy was still, on the up and up on Monday Night Raw. And then obviously just his own personal problems is what led him to leaving WWE in late February, March, whatever it technically was, of 2003. But you gotta wonder, maybe Jeff Hardy would have been in the world title picture in 2003 fighting Triple H of all people, coincidentally, since that was the guy he ended up beating and having that feud with later on in 2008. But kind of interesting, like, Jeff Hardy's rise and his popularity throughout 2002 and in 2003, if he kept on that, kept on that steam and was still on Monday Night Raw, I wouldn't be surprised if we saw Hardy versus Triple H that year. Not saying, you know, Triple H would have, or Jeff Hardy would have won the title, but I don't know, something to think about. You know, Jeff Hardy versus Triple H in place of, you know, some of those Goldberg matches or whatever the hell. Like, I don't know, these just Triple H and it's versus Scott Steiner and Kevin Nash, not necessarily matches I'm going back to watch, right? But, you know, I don't know, maybe if we got a longer feud with Booker winning the title, or Jeff Hardy were in that spot in 03, things could have been different, you never know. But regarding the Elimination Chamber finish, of course, Shawn Michaels, Triple H, the last two guys, Shawn defeating Triple H, winning the world title. And the only thing that sucks about this is that Shawn literally holds that title for the 3-4 weeks in the build to Armageddon, and then loses the title in a legendary, I will say, three stages of hell match back to Triple H at Armageddon. And this ends up being the last world title that Shawn Michaels holds in his career. And I wish Shawn Michaels would have had a longer reign with that belt. I understand, like, this is more probably a win for the moment, like completing Shawn Michaels' comeback story and really getting him back in the fold on Monday Night Raw. Because really, Shawn versus Jericho at WrestleMania 19 went off without a hitch. It didn't need the world championship. Where Triple H and Booker T, that's more of a match that needs, you know, the world title to really get people to care. So, like, if the matches themselves at Mania 19 were to stay the same, obviously, one having the world title needs a little bit more. But I wish Shawn would have had a little bit longer of a reign. Even if it meant, like, getting rid of those Scott Steiner matches. Like, obviously, they didn't know at the time they were going to be as bad as they were. But, like, looking back in hindsight, like, getting rid of those Steiner matches with Triple H at the Rumble and No Way Out, maybe Shawn defends it against Phil in the Blank at Armageddon successfully, and then maybe he drops it back to Triple H at the Rumble or No Way Out or something like that, and then they go on to WrestleMania, you know, the same as it did. But I don't know. I wish Shawn, that's one thing I always look back on. I wish Shawn would have had a longer reign as world champ. I wish Shawn just would have had another world championship reign, WWE championship reign in general, before he ended up retiring, whether that was in, you know, 2007, 2008. Didn't have to be long, but I always thought Shawn should have got one more reign, and unfortunately it just never came to be. But at least we had this legendary moment in Madison Square Garden that has now been, commemorized, if you will, in Elite action figure form. I have not gotten it in yet, but they just did put out the Survivor Series Elite Wave for this year, the Shawn Michaels 2002 gear, which is technically like brown, like attire, even though it kind of looks more black, I will say, when you're watching it out. But I guess the tights are technically more brown, but whatever the delivery, whatever it technically was, Mattel's delivery on this thing was like, yo, it's brown. It's a little bit off, but I still want the figure just to commemorate it in my collection with my Ruthless Aggression, my shelves there. If you don't know what I'm talking about, if you've never seen it, go look it up on Google. Just type in Survivor Series Shawn Michaels Elite, you'll find it. It's a little bit too brown. Mattel's a little bit off of the delivery there, but it's an action figure. It ain't life or death. But that was Survivor Series, man, in 2002, and it was a freaking legendary show. Again, as I said earlier, I'm not your move-by-move breakdown guy. We're just here to reminisce. We're here to have a good time. We're here to talk about, you know, some of the best of the best. And continue to do each and every Thursday, man. So a nice reintroduction to the podcast, Survivor Series 2002, but it won't always be, you know, events that we're going back. We're going to not just do pay-per-views, we're going to do Raws, SmackDowns. We might even dive into some 2006 ECW eventually, just talk about how horrendous it was. But we're also going to do some other stuff. We're going to do some, I got a couple of top 10s, honestly, and maybe they won't be full-on top 10s. Maybe it'll just be list until, you know, the list runs out. But I want to do some podcasts, you know, talk about the top 10 stars, the most memorable moments, the most memorable matches. Next week, next Thursday, I'll say this now, Ruthless Discussion Episode 7, we are going to run down the 10 best rivalries, in my opinion, of the Ruthless Aggression era and give a little backstory on all of them. Really excited about that. That's actually a, you know, fun fact here, pulling back the curtain. That was actually a YouTube video that I had in the tank for a while that I just never completed. So we're just going to scrap it and basically turn it into a podcast that I'm going to reshoot and, you know, talk about next week. So next week's Ruthless Discussion podcast, running down the 10 best rivalries of the RA era. So stay tuned for that. But definitely, man, I hope you guys enjoyed this. You know, I hope you guys are going to go back and watch Survivor Series 2002, or maybe you watched it and then came to listen to what I had to say. So definitely, if you're here on YouTube, drop some thoughts on the show down below in the comments. And if you're listening on Apple, Google, Spotify, whatever it is, come feel free to come over to YouTube, drop them in the comments, you know, your thoughts, or tweet me on the old X or Instagram, whatever the hell. Just drop your thoughts. I don't care. Let's create the discourse. And I will say, a couple of plugs once again before we get out of here. Again, be sure to subscribe here on the No Nation Wrestling channel on YouTube, and be sure to follow on whatever podcast platform you're looking for. If you guys want to get a bonus episode of the Ruthless Discussions podcast each and every month, which will start, I forgot to say this earlier, which will start in the month of December, you can be sure to become a premium past channel member right here on YouTube. And I also want to give a plug to my own Noah Nation Gaming YouTube channel, because recently we have been streaming SmackDown versus Raw video games, currently in the midst of a SmackDown versus Raw 2007 general manager mode. So if you're a Ruthless Aggression guy, you might be interested in coming over and watching some of those live streams. So definitely be sure to go check out the Noah Nation Gaming channel. And that is gonna bring us to a close. Ruthless Discussions podcast back in action again each and every Thursday morning across whichever platform you guys are interested in checking it out on. But thank you guys so much for checking out this return episode of the podcast. A lot of fun, and I'm looking forward to being here and doing this each and every week. And definitely drop down below in the comments as well any certain events. They could be random Raw, SmackDowns. You know, feel free to be really specific down below in the comments, stuff we should go back and watch and review and talk about. And just overall discussions you guys want to have. What if scenarios, things we could have changed. You know, I'm down to talk about anything during the RA era. So definitely leave your thoughts and what you guys would like to see and conversations you would like to have down below in the comments. But until next time, guys, thank you for checking out the Ruthless Discussions podcast. And I'll see you guys next week. Peace.